Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for making us a part of your schedule today and making us part of his schedule. And I sure appreciate it because he is very busy. Montana's Attorney General Tim Fox. Tim, thanks very much for taking some time out.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Troy. I often say I see our journalist friends and people in radio and TV as partners in spreading the word and educating Montanans and, you know, hopefully making this place a better place.
This, of course, the time when much of our focus turns to the legislative session, a big focus for you and your office, certainly. But just quickly, before we jump into that, I did want to ask you about Ronald Tipton and the status of that case. I guess maybe first give folks just a quick summary of that, but then let us know where that stands, because as I understand it, his attorney has filed a response to the Supreme Court.
That's correct. This is the case where a recent DNA match in a criminal case identified the alleged perpetrator of a child rape from over 30 years ago. A woman, a young girl, an 8-year-old girl, was raped in her bedroom. Unfortunately, the wrong person was prosecuted so many years ago, Jimmy Ray Baumgard, and eventually with the advent of DNA evidence, he was exonerated and was released from prison, but it left the issue of, okay, who actually committed this crime? Thankfully, that DNA evidence was maintained over the years, and eventually Ronald Tipton, an individual who lives here in Montana, was arrested, and as a part of his sentence, he had to give a DNA sample, and that created a match. So the Yellowstone County attorney prosecuted him under a statute that had been passed a few years ago that extended the statute of limitations in cases where DNA evidence identified an alleged perpetrator of a rape against a child. Eventually, the Montana Supreme Court dismissed the charges against Mr. Tipton because of some United States Supreme Court precedent, which they believed was controlling. So we have appealed to the United States Supreme Court. They call it applying for certiorari. And the case has been briefed now, and so we're waiting to hear if the United States Supreme Court will take it up on certiorari. Then there'll be another round of briefing and an oral argument sometime later this year. You know, not a lot of cases get taken up by the Supreme Court, but when a state attorney general is involved bringing the appeal, those odds go up. And then we also got multiple states to file a brief, an amicus brief in support. A victims organization filed a brief. The National District Attorneys Association filed a brief, all in support of our application. And so I'm hopeful that this case will be brought up. It's an important issue of whether or not, since now that the science has really moved so far forward, that we should be able to bring to trial individuals that we've positively identified through DNA as being the perpetrators of these crimes against children.
So now, as sort of standard with the Supreme Court, it's just a bit of a wait and see and wait to see what happens now.
That's right. So when the application is made, in this case by the state of Montana on behalf of our citizens, the defendant then has an opportunity to respond. And it's not a defendant, actually, it's a respondent in this case. Mr. Tipton has retained a very prominent law firm in Washington, D.C. that does a lot of United States Supreme Court work, and it's pretty common for individuals who like to build their resume to take these cases on pro bono. He'll have good advocacy on his side. Of course, we have excellent lawyers in our office. And this may be a case, if it's actually certiorari is granted, it may be a case that I'll personally argue orally before the United States Supreme Court. It's just that important.
So when it comes to the legislative session, you've got a couple of things that are key for you. And I think maybe topping that list is strengthening our laws when it comes to sexual assault investigations. That's something that you've worked on for years, but now we're actually doing something in the session to try to formalize that. Can you let us know what's going on there?
Yeah, in fact, you know, we've actually done a number of things in the past. You'll recall that my office brought a bill to create a felony offense of strangulation. That's been a tremendously successful a law in keeping primarily women, but men too, safe. In the last session, we worked very hard to get the definition of consent changed in our sexual assault statutes to reflect realities of those crimes. And in this particular session, what we've done is Diane Sands, there from Missoula, is carrying a bill for us, Senate Bill 52, that we hope to memorialize some work that I've done as Attorney General. You'll recall that we established the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative Task Force about 3.5 years ago to study the issue of these untested sexual assault kits that had accumulated in local law enforcement evidence lockers. And through that process, we got a grant from the federal government to have all of those kits tested and the DNA evidence then uploaded to the National CODIS database. And through that, we're able to potentially solve some crimes, identify serial rapists, et cetera. We also use some of the money to establish a kit tracking system that also allows the victims of these crimes to know their rights and also know where the case is as it progresses. And we've hired some individuals to provide victim services and also a cold case investigator. So all of that is through temporary money through a federal grant. And so what we've asked the legislature to do in Senate Bill 52 is to do a four-year study, fund a four-year study that includes funding to continue these services and programs so that at the end of the 4 years, we can come back and report to the legislature and hopefully determine whether or not these programs and services should be funded long-term. So I really appreciate our legislators taking a look at that. I think this is important. Our underlying and overall goal is to have a justice system that works, that's fair, and that instills confidence in individuals who unfortunately have become victims of these sexual crimes so that they will self-report and that they will work through the system and get the justice that they so deserve.
This initiative, as you mentioned, it started back in 2015, though were found at that time to be something like 1,400 sexual assault kits that were untested. How does something like that even happen?
So it happens for various reasons. For instance, if they don't need the DNA evidence to actually prosecute the crime, say there's an eyewitness or something to that effect, then a decision might be made locally by the prosecutor to not get the kit tested. Sometimes we have victims who disappear. They may be transient, whatever the situation might be, and so the case can't go forward. We might have someone who, a perpetrator who admits to the crime, so we don't need to spend a lot of money investigating or testing evidence. A lot of different things. So, but I think it's important that we, and was part of the goal, is that we find a way that we don't continually have a backlog of these kits that are sitting around not being tested. So the program we have now will allow local law enforcement to have all of the kits tested, and of course the state pays for that through our state crime lab, and I think that's important for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is that we may identify someone who actually committed a crime elsewhere that we didn't have DNA for, or had DNA but we didn't match them actually who they are.
Something else that you've been involved with, Senate Bill, I believe it's 114, that would revise stalking and orders of protection laws, looking in part to double the possible maximum sentence to 10 years. This is something you take very seriously as well.
It really is. I appoint people to a domestic fatality review commission. This is something that Montana pioneered a number of years ago. And what they do is twice a year they meet and they thoroughly analyze situations where someone has died in a domestic violence scenario. Usually it's either husbands and wives or partners, could be a double, could be a homicide, suicide situation, whatever it is. And we go through basically cradle to grave for all of those individuals involved, family members. We look at the, you know, the history and the situations. We don't point any fingers or blame anybody. It's all confidential. We get local people, family members, others involved. We interview them. And then the commission sits down for 2 days and goes through this painstaking timeline, if you will. And we identify the flags, the warning signs, the various things that could have helped, but maybe someone didn't intervene, et cetera. And in the last session, we brought a bill that created a felony crime of strangulation. That came out of these commission hearings because what we've seen is that these situations escalate. And one of the ways in which individuals who eventually might kill someone operate is they use strangulation as a way of manipulating and controlling their eventual victim. So now we in Montana have a felony strangulation crime. And we've prosecuted over, I think, over 200 of those since that law was enacted. Same thing with stalking. The old law on stalking basically was very wishy-washy, didn't have a real concrete standard by which to bring folks accountable for stalking, didn't include some of the more technologically advanced ways in which someone might stalk over social media or cell phones or what have you. So now we're changing the standard so that we can keep people safe, hopefully prevent stalking across the state. And so I think this is a very, very important bill. We've worked with, you know, victims' rights groups, our prosecutors across the state and others, to come up with a standard that works for the 21st century.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox, our guest this morning. Tim, such a good guest that we've run out of time, but we still have more to talk about. So what we're going to do for you, a little bit of a first for Coffee Break, is we now have the Coffee Break podcast. That's available online at kcap.com. And what we'll do, because we do have more to talk with Tim about, he's going to stick around a little bit. We're going to come back after this break and chat with Meg Crane about a really cool program that she's got going on. And then after that, more with Tim Fox. Now, we don't want to cut into Voices of Montana, so what we'll do is put the rest of our conversation online, a bit of an extra shot of Coffee Break, if you will. So you just go to kcap.com. At the top left of the page is a link to the Coffee Break podcast. You can click on that, and right at the front end, it will be the conversation you've already heard, and then the conversation with Meg Crane. But then at the end, we'll rejoin with more Tim Fox. Keep it right here. Coffee Break, Meg Crane, coming up. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Coffee Break is sponsored by Kelly DeWolf, your reverse mortgage funding specialist at 1422 Cedar Street, Helena. Kelly DeWolf, reverse mortgage specialist. For details, contact him at kellydewolf@reversefunding.com. Now, back to our show. Welcome back into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for sticking around. Finishing off the show today, Meg Crane. Meg, you've been in before to chat with us, but it's been a minute. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah.
You've got a really cool thing going on, but I want to just at least mention the last time you were here, we had a clothing swap that you spearheaded, and it sounds like that went really well.
Yes, it was fantastic. I got a ton of clothes, and a lot of people who really needed some free clothes came by and got them.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing, and we're going to have you in again when that goes up, because I know you can't help yourself. You're always doing something. So there's going to be another clothing swap. There's going to be another something going on, and we'll chat about that. But right now, the cool project you've got centering around handmade Valentines that you're going to be sending to women's shelters?
Yes, Yeah, so across Canada and the U.S.
Okay, you've been doing this for a while now. You said this is the fifth year. How many cards have you sent out over that time?
Oh, in total, I would say around 7,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes, it is a lot. It ends up with a lot of glitter all over my home, too. Right.
So you're getting glitter out for like 6 months, probably.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, if we do the math, I mean, that's, you know, maybe 2,000 or something roughly a year. We're putting together a couple of thousand Valentines here.
Yes.
Okay. So where did this come from? I mean, where did this idea sort of germinate of, hey, this is something I should do?
So I run this project called Stitching Hearts. So every 2 months, I start a new low-cost, low-scale crafting project that people can get involved in to help somebody in need. And so around Valentine's Day 5 years ago, I thought that it'd be really nice to make Valentines. And initially, we sent them to a homeless shelter in Winnipeg. And that was really nice. They loved it. But I started to think that maybe people who were in domestic abuse shelters would need the love a little bit more at that time of year. So that the next year I switched over to women's shelters, and it went great. I thought I was going to send them just to people in Winnipeg, but we ended up with the whole province of Manitoba, and the next year all of Canada. And then last year we started sending to Canada and the U.S.
Yeah, it's sort of growing every year. It's one of those little capsules when you're a kid, you put them in the water and it grew into some animal out of foam. your animal is growing. And you go to Walmart that you get the kids to send to school with, you know, you tear along the perforated lines. I mean, these are handmade cards that we're talking about.
Yes, they are.
So what goes into that? I mean, it sounds like a pretty labor-intensive project.
It is. So I have a little Valentine making station at my house right now. So I just make a few every day. And then there are also craft parties across Canada and a few in the U.S. where people just get together with stencils and fancy paper and markers and stickers or just whatever they have. And at these events, there's a lot of Googling for good puns or inspirational quotes to put in them. And it's actually a really fun time.
Yeah. And I mean, what's it been like since that first time when it was, hey, let's try this. This sounds like something that would be neat. Did you expect, I mean, 5 years later that this is where you are? It's got to be neat kind of reflecting on that.
It is. I didn't expect this at all. Yeah.
Have you ever had a chance or a moment where you sit back and just sort of go, whoa?
Yes. Yeah.
Probably every time you go to the post office now, just before every Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and I kind of forget every year. So leading up to it, I set aside a little bit of time to work on the Valentines, and then it starts to get closer and closer to Valentine's Day. Right. And I'm like, oh no, how am I going to get this finished? So I'm kind of changing the project a little bit every year to make it a bit easier on myself.
Right, a little easier to handle. We've got Meg Crane this morning, and Meg's spearheading yet another fantastic project here in town. We're putting together handmade Valentines for people in shelters. And people should remember that the women in these shelters have gone through some pretty horrific circumstances many times, and then have made a pretty brave decision to put themselves in that position, to be in that shelter. I mean, this is a group of people that absolutely needs a little bit of love and recognition.
Yeah.
So it's something that I guess maybe tells them that, you know, you're important. We thought of you. You matter. I mean, it's a little thing that I'm assuming can go a long way.
Yes. And a lot of the cards that do go to the women also say things like, I'm so proud of you. You are so brave. You are so strong. And they kind of highlight that they're doing something that is really significant.
And I guess we shouldn't ignore, because you were telling me during the break that it's not just to the women in the shelters. You're sending them to the kids as well, right?
Yes, to the kids and also the workers and the volunteers. So every package that goes to a shelter has three separate envelopes inside, one with cards for kids, which tend to be pretty funny. Those are the ones with a lot of puns. And then a package for the women, which tend to be the ones with inspirational quotes. And then one for the workers that basically say thank you for the tough work that you're doing.
Right. And one of the things I think is so neat about this is, I mean, it's something that people can help you out with. I mean, even if they don't have a lot of spare money, they don't have a lot of spare time, this is something anybody can do. It's a simple thing, but it can have an impact. So what can we do? How can people help you?
So there are quite a few ways. One is simply to just share the project. So if you go to megjcrane.com and go to the events tab, all the info is there. Just sharing it helps. I also am taking donations of postage, both Canadian and American. Any kind of craft supplies is really helpful. It's really great when people sign up to make cards. So through that event page, there is a link to sign up. You can also sign up just to send cards. So if the idea of making cards is kind of intimidating, you can just gather cards that others have made and send them off.
Yeah, so you've got a place for people that are crafty. You got a place that people can are willing to stand in line at the post office. People that, hey, I just want to shop. They can go get stuff. I mean, there is a spot for everybody here. What can we do to get that to you then? I mean, if it's the physical, hey, I want to make a donation of, be it postage, money, you know, markers, you know, whatever it is. How can we get that to you?
So there are a few ways. First of all, you can just contact me at megjcrane@gmail.com, and we can arrange something. There are also a few events around town. So tomorrow I'll be doing a zine-making party at Montana Books from 1 to 4. So you can just stop in and drop stuff off. And the Art Space downtown on Placer, every Thursday they have a free art session over lunch from noon to 1. And this month she's dedicating it to this project. So people are making Valentine's. So that would also be a place to drop things off.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So lots of opportunity to help you out here. We're talking with Meg Crane, and she's behind a project to make some handmade Valentine's for women in shelters that have gone through some pretty horrible domestic violence situations, and also to the kids that are there. And I think very cool to the workers that are there. How did that come about? Because it makes sense. Okay, let's send it to the women. Let's send it to the kiddos. But how did you then decide, you know what, let's send it to the people that are helping the women and the children?
So I think it was the third year, kind of last minute, an entire school division in Winnipeg decided that they were going to get all of their kids to make cards. And so I got 1,200 cards just from them. And it was so last minute, I didn't have time to contact more shelters. So I just decided to throw extra ones in for the workers. And then I kind of thought about it after. And they are doing really, really tough work that I don't know that they always get total credit for. It's not a fun job. So I thought it would be nice to just keep that up.
Yeah, it's a super neat thing. And you listed some of the places that people can help out. What's the web address where they can go again in case they missed that? If you did miss it, you can go back. The Coffee Break podcast will be up on kcap.com a little bit later today. You can get some of the specifics. But as far as website, where can they go again to get information?
So they can go to megjcrane.com and just look under the events tab.
Okay. And that's where they can find out more information about this. They can sign up to do mailing, or if they want to make the cards, all that is available there.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a few minutes left, about 2 minutes left. You are the brilliant mind behind the cockroach zine. How is that going?
It's going really well. Yeah.
Good. Can you explain to people what a zine is? Because as you mentioned, you have the zine making event coming up this weekend. What is a zine and what can they learn there?
So a zine is basically a small DIY magazine. So anybody can make one, and they can be really small, they can be huge, they can be done with pencil and paper, or they can be done on the computer. And so the third Saturday of every month, I have a zine making party at Montana Books. And I just bring magazines and fun paper and all sorts of supplies. And we just sit down and make our own zines. So if somebody doesn't know what a zine is, I've got a big basket with examples that they can go through. If anyone has any questions, they can ask me questions. And otherwise, I just give them a little bit of inspiration and we get to work.
And that's coming up tomorrow.
Yes.
From 1 to 4?
Yes.
Okay. And where's that at again?
Montana Books.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you should, and then go to that and then look through some of their stuff because that's a fantastic place to shop.
Yes, it is.
You could spend a lot of time in Montana Books.
Yeah. I did all my Christmas shopping there this year.
Brilliant. Yeah. I've done a lot of my Christmas money buying there. You know, hey, they sent you my grandma and grandpa just sends you a check. Well, I know where it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fantastic place. But Meg Crane, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah. Thanks
for
having me.
You're doing really cool stuff in the community. And I appreciate what you're doing from the clothing swap to working on this, the Valentine's Day cards for folks. It's a really neat thing. Again, go on and check her out. It's MegJCrane.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, your name is a website. You know you're a big deal. So go and check out Meg Crane's zine. Check out the website. Check out information about the Valentines. You can make donations of money. You can make donations of postage. You can send them construction paper. Whatever you want to do, whatever you can do to help out, it's a really cool thing. So, Meg, thanks for coming in. You earned your red coffee mug this morning for sure.
Thanks.
Typically, that'd be all the time we have for Coffee Break this morning. But this is the internet. We have no time limits. They can't stop us. So we're going to keep chatting. We have more to talk about with Attorney General Tim Fox. We just ran out of time on the air. So a Coffee Break first for you, a bit of an extra shot, if you will. We're going to continue our conversation with Montana Attorney General Tim Fox as a podcast special. Tim, I sure appreciate you sticking around. And one thing that we were talking about before is sort of your focus during this legislative session. And one thing that you've got coming up is something that seems like is a pretty huge endeavor. You're looking to essentially rewrite the state's DUI laws and codes. Can you explain to us sort of the key points here? Because that's a big endeavor. And it's no secret that Montana has a problem when it comes to drinking and driving.
Yeah, so our primary focus is we want to simplify the DUI laws so they're understandable both by citizens and prosecutors and judges and juries. We want to eliminate some of the loopholes that have occurred over time as these statutes have been amended and re-amended and amended again. And so we get some unintended consequences where people find loopholes get out of being prosecuted for DUIs. We'd like to make sure that law enforcement has the option of getting a blood warrant, even in a first DUI situation, which they can't right now. And then primarily we want to intervene early in individuals' lives and get them to treatment and other options so that they don't reoffend. And our laws have just become kind of antiquated and convoluted. And so we're totally rewriting them, or asking the legislature to totally rewrite them to better address the issue of driving under the influence. Montana has one of the worst records in the country. For many years, we've been either number one or number two, both in the number of DUIs per capita and the number of DUI-related deaths per capita. Now, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've really worked hard and we've been able to do better there and reduce some of those statistics. But the fact remains that alcohol is the most abused substance in Montana, and driving under the influence is just one of the worst things that we as Montanans engage in. So we have to also, I think, change the societal bias that's out there that suggests that driving and drinking is okay. It just isn't.
Would this also increase potential punishment for offenses, particularly for repeat offenders? Because I think that's something that we see far too often is, you know, someone getting a fifth, an eighth, a tenth DUI because they get their license suspended, or they get, you know, something that the average citizen looks at and says, how is that equivalent to what they've been doing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have to recognize that if someone is getting multiple DUIs, it's not like they were just unlucky and happened to get pulled over some night when they made a bad judgment one time. It's because they're doing it over and over and over again. And some of the studies suggest that when you get up into the 2, 3, and 4 range or even beyond, you're doing it all the time. And you're just not getting caught. And ultimately, somebody's going to get hurt, somebody's going to die. And so we need to have a system that catches folks early on, obviously, gets them the help they need. But when and if you become a repeat offender and become a huge danger to society, then there has to be consequences. And in previous legislative sessions, we increased fines and penalties in certain multiple DUI situations because Montana hadn't changed those penalties and fines for 20 years or more. And all of our sister states around the area had much stiffer penalties. But again, we also have to address the root cause and the societal bias that we have out there in Montana that drinking and driving is okay. We need to find the root causes and understand them better and try to educate people and prevent them from ever drinking and driving and certainly not doing it multiple times.
Related to that, I mean, alcohol, the most abused substance, I guess, here in Montana, but you want to target just substance abuse in general. That's House Bill, is it 86?
Yeah, so, you know, our primary focus this session kind of arises out of my Aid Montana program, which we started a couple of years ago to comprehensively study and bring all of the interested players, parties, et cetera, together to really focus on how we are going to better our substance use disorder crisis in this state. So this is the first legislative session since we began that program. And so that's why many of our bills are focused on that. House Bill 86 is a bill, an agency bill that we brought that specifically addresses the opioid abuse problem. Opioid-based prescription drugs is a huge problem across the country and in our state. And we've learned a lot of things through the years, and we're making some progress nationally and locally on changing attitudes, prescribing methods, working on preventing diversion and whatnot. One of the things we've learned in our studies is that the larger dose of opioid-based prescription drugs that a patient is prescribed, the more apt they are to abuse them and potentially get addicted. And so we've been working with doctors and hospitals to come up with a prescribing limit for first-time prescriptions of opioid-based drugs, with some exceptions, medically-based exceptions, that recognizes that you just don't need a 60- or 90-day supply of things like oxycodone for a sprained ankle or something. So those are the extremes, of course. There are other situations that are a little more difficult to call. But we believe that we can use some of these laws to help that problem. Another thing we're looking at asking the legislature to do is eventually, over the course of several years, requiring prescribers and pharmacies to go to an e-script or electronic script system. We wouldn't do that overnight because there's some cost involved, whatnot, but what we know is that paper prescriptions are easily stolen, forged, and altered. And, you know, we've just come so far in technology that we don't need to be writing prescriptions on paper anymore, and particularly when those can be abused. So we want to set up that system. And then finally, while some of the pharmacies, particularly the big box pharmacies, require a valid ID before you can get certain controlled prescription substances, not everyone does that. And so we want to require that in the law as well. And then a couple of things we didn't talk about are prevention education funds and better funding of our specialty courts, our treatment courts. Both of those areas are places where the state really doesn't put a lot of resources in. We believe that both prevention education and treatment courts are important parts of the all of the above process we think that will help this issue. And so we're working with the governor's office and the legislature to try to find some funding avenues for prevention education, and also making our treatment courts better sustained.
Well, sir, I know you're busy. I know you got to get going, but I appreciate your efforts to keep us safe and to make us safer.
Well, thank you. And, you know, we couldn't do this alone. We have a lot of partners, both in government and in the private sector. So we just ask that you, your listeners get engaged with the legislature and their local legislators, study these bills, send in letters and comments. This system only works with citizen participation. So thanks for getting the word out.
All right. You have a good day, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And with that, the end to our first Coffee Break podcast extra shot. Again, thanks to Tim Fox for spending some extra time with us today. And now, finally, that really is all the time we have for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes, head on over, give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Coffee Break, brought to you by News Radio 95 KCAP and sponsored by Kelly DeWolf, your reverse mortgage funding specialist at 1422 Cedar Street, Helena. Kelly DeWolf, reverse mortgage funding specialist. Kelly DeWolf at reversefunding.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.